WLFE TV Radio.
Hi, this is William Irwin, author of The Meaning of Metallica, Ride the Lyrics. You're listening to Metal Mayhem ROC with Vernomatic.
Are you ready?
Live from the Metal Mayhem Studios in Rochester, New York.
We are gold.
And heard around the world by metalheads just like you. This is Metal Mayhem ROC.
Heavy metal music.
Your weekly dose of metal music, interviews, album reviews, news, and more.
Want to be part of the show?
Send us a message through our website,
MetalMayhemROC.com.
Or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter.
Search Metal Mayhem ROC.
It's getting nice and heavy.
And now, welcome tonight's host, John the Vernomatic Verno.
Good evening, everybody. As always, Thursday night's brand new content drops. Tonight's episode, we go to Heavy Metal College. We welcome to the show Professor William Irwin, his brand new book, The Meaning of Metallica, Ride the Lyrics. Now, this book just came out this Tuesday, April 19th. You could find it everywhere. It's the first book to focus exclusively on the lyrics of the band. Professor Irwin takes a deep dive into such topics as truth, identity, alienation, addiction, justice, all those fun topics that James Hetfield, the main lyricist of Metallica, tries to convey in the killer, killer music of Metallica. That's coming up in just a minute. But first, just want to remind you about our brand new website, MetalMayhemROC.com. Sign up for our email newsletter, join our community. There you'll find past shows, download them, do us a favor, rate and review and subscribe to the podcast. There you'll have direct links to my radio show I do on Monday nights on Metal Devastation Radio and part of our team, Metal Mark James. He has two kick-ass shows on Friday and Saturday nights on his platform. Check out the Meet the Team page where each of us, Metal Walt, Ian O'Rourke, Bill the Rager, Southern Cal, we all have our own pages and links to our different platforms. So that's about it. Now, on to our feature interview tonight. Heavy metal professor William Irwin in his book, The Meaning of Metallica, Ride the Lyrics. I'm the Vernomatic. This is Metal Mayhem ROC. And as always, keep it heavy.
Hey! Listen up.
Now get that popcorn ready and grab a seat.
Do it!
As the Vernomatic presents this week's feature interview, exclusively here on Metal Mayhem ROC.
Tonight, our guest is New York Times best-selling philosophy author, Professor Bill Irwin. Books include his pop culture series, The Simpsons, Seinfeld, The Matrix. Well, he's here today to talk about his new book, a heavy book, The Meaning of Metallica, Ride the Lyrics. Let's welcome to Metal Mayhem ROC heavy metal scholar, Professor Bill Irwin.
Hey, thanks for having me, Vernomatic. Great to be with you. I know you know your metal, man. I've been listening. I'm ready to talk.
Well, good, good. Great book. Just came out on Tuesday the 19th. Metallica, The Meaning of Metal, Ride the Lyrics. Great title. Goes right into what you wanted to talk about. Got tons of questions. Going to dive right into it. First and foremost, how long have you been a Metallica fan and why now on this book?
Well, I'd like to say I go back as far as you, Vernomatic, but I know you go all the way back to Kill 'Em All. I go back to Ride the Lightning, 1984, okay? We know years and months make a difference in claiming OG Metallica fan status. So I tip my hat to you there. I go back to 1984, when I'm a budding young metalhead, Ozzy, Sabbath, Priest, that kind of stuff, hanging out with my buddy Joe, we're Beavis and Butthead before there was Beavis and Butthead, and Joe is a step ahead of me, as he often is, and gets a copy of Ride the Lightning, and, he tapes that for me, and as we did back in the day, I had the cassette tape and played that through, and then bought my own copy, and really, it was like nothing else I had heard at that time. Faster, heavier, and in many ways deeper than a lot of other metal out there. So it really struck a chord with me right off the bat.
Ride the Lightning Tour, did you have a chance to see it?
Did not. I was a little on the young side. I know I've heard, listening to you, that you almost went to the show in Buffalo where they got snowed in.
Yeah, it's still a sore spot.
Ironically, I could have possibly seen that tour because I was a fan of Wasp at the time before I knew of Metallica, and they were basically opening for Wasp, or, you know, maybe co-headlining, yeah. Right? And yep. Wasp, I believe on that tour, played L'Amour in Brooklyn, where I you know, ended up seeing lots of shows. Never Metallica. They were too big by the time I got there, but I saw Slayer on Rain and Blood and Overkill, nice, nice. And, you know, Anthrax a bunch of times at L'Amour. So it could have accidentally happened that I went to see Wasp and saw this new band Metallica, but it didn't happen that way for me.
Are you a native New York?
Yeah. So I'm from Yonkers, right outside New York City, and so yeah, we'd see the shows in the New York metro area. And L'Amour was called the rock capital of Brooklyn, sort of famous East Coast place. So yeah, you got me by a couple of years. And man, I don't know, it always seems like when you're into metal, the golden age was just a little bit before you came of age. At least that's the way it always seems to me.
You know what? I'm 2 years ahead of you. Well, there are some guys a couple years ahead of me that, you know, saw some of those late 70s Priest tours, yes. And, you know, Maiden on Killers and their first album. Yeah. So, you know, there's dudes 2 years younger than you that are saying, oh, you saw Master
of Puppets. That's right. But that's just the way it always looks, you know?
All right, so you have your metal credentials. Props to you. Let's talk about the book. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the book is called The Meaning of Metallica, subtitle Ride the Lyrics, and it's the only book out there. Lots of Metallica books, lots of great Metallica books. I think I've read them all. Friends with some of the authors even. But you generally see sort of background, biography, great storytelling. In some cases, you see some catalogs of the songs, where they explain some of the background that's been released here and there in interviews. What I do is look at the songs, in many cases line by line, and analyze the lyrics. And this is something that I've been doing since probably I am 14. I like to say that Metallica brought me two things that lots of guys my age, particularly back then, shied away from, and that is poetry and therapy. From the beginning, you know, I probably got into poetry by looking at song lyrics, and in particular, the best among them, in my opinion, Metallica's. And although I was a goofy Beavis and Butthead type kid, I was also, you know, the brooding existentialist type kid with a crisis about meaning and what's it all about. And quite frankly, Fade to Black was the first song that really spoke to me. And although James didn't write that from a place of suicidal despair himself, he puts himself in the mindset of somebody who really is feeling those feelings, and just listening to it all the way through, you know, inspired me to keep going. And you know, Metallica's music is and lyrics are always about fighting forward and not giving up and finding hope, and it really did that for me. And so they've been the soundtrack of my life, at least since I'm 14, all the way through to the, you know, the most recent album, which isn't that recent anymore. And they've always been a source of inspiration and therapy and poetry for me. And so this is my sort of tribute to that. I know that a lot of fans take the lyrics very seriously, as I do. Not everybody. Some people really just tune into the music, and that's fine, too. And you know, other musical artists have gotten very serious treatment. I mean, Bob Dylan gets the Nobel Prize and lots of books written about Dylan's lyrics, and, you know, all props to him for that. Metal music in particular just, you know, it seems to get dissed over and over. I mean, with, you know, yeah. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or whatever it is. And so here I Grammys. Am saying, you know, this is really first-rate stuff that needs to be taken seriously. Certainly, without good music, the lyrics won't do very much for me. So, like, you take, like, Leonard Cohen, great Canadian artist, you know, who's got great lyrics, but the music doesn't really get me. And, you know, he's certainly not metal, but I don't, you know, restrict myself necessarily to metal. But yeah, from early on, I mean, like Ozzy and Sabbath, I mean, I was tuned into their lyrics, and a lot of that really spoke to me even mm-hmm. before I came to Metallica. And that's always been the case for me. I mean, sure, the guitar and the drums and all that has to be there, but bad lyrics can ruin a good song for me.
What kind of research did you do for this? Was it just relying on your memory, did interviews, or just everything?
Yeah, well,
50, 40 years, 35 years of following.
Right. So in some way, I've been writing the book in my head since I'm 14. But more seriously, I think I've read every book on Metallica that's been written, and there are quite a few at this point, and lots of published interviews. And all that kind of thing. It's really a lot of having listened to the songs hundreds, thousands of times. And that was in some way an obstacle because I didn't want to ruin the songs for myself by listening to them repeatedly just to dissect for the sake of doing this. And so I did something, I just kind of happened on doing this. I ended up memorizing the lyrics so that I could sing them for myself. And I've got nobody's idea of a good voice. Not only can I not play an instrument, but I can't carry a tune. But that was my way of really sort of reverse engineering the lyrics for myself that way, thinking of how they would be sung and where they're coming from. I did reach out to Metallica, management and such, requesting an interview. And I was treated very kindly and professionally, and it just didn't end up happening. And I can understand that. A lot of artists don't want to comment on or even be interviewed about their lyrics.
Was there any songs that didn't make the cut? How do you decide what songs to profile?
Yeah, so, I mean... first of all, it really covers the whole catalog from Kill 'Em All, where I don't talk a lot about Kill 'Em, but songs do make it there all the way up to Hardwired to Self-Destruct. And I haven't done a count on it, but I would say half of Metallica's songs get at least some sort of mention and discussion. Other songs get elaborate line-by-line analysis and dissection. And so what the book does is it doesn't catalog album by album, song by song, but rather goes thematically and looks for songs that sort of speak to one another or continue a theme, right? So the first chapter in the book deals with religion. And so I have a lengthy dissection and analysis of Creeping Death into Leper Messiah, into The God That Failed. That sort of thing, right? Second chapter deals with addiction. And so I'm looking at like Master of Puppets, Low Man's Lyric, Fixer, and other songs that really speak to that.
Do you ever surprise yourself after the thousands of times you've heard these songs? You know, you got a different interpretation.
So one song that stood out for me that way was The Unforgiven 2. I've got some analysis of the whole trilogy of Unforgiven songs. And I mean, I've listened to that song hundreds of times, you know, maybe not thousands in the case of that one since it's on Reload, but I've listened to it hundreds of times. And it wasn't until I started really dissecting it and trying to link it with the first and the third Unforgivens that it became clear that by the end, the narrator ends up killing the woman who he's in love with. And if you take a look at the printed lyrics, it becomes very clear, right, that dead sure she'll be there, her eyes are closed, she'll never love again. I mean, it really is very grim, sort of tongue-in-cheek. When you think of metal, you don't usually think subtle, but Hetfield is really very subtle and cagey at times with some of the lyrical analysis.
I remember as a kid, you would sit there, you had nothing else to do, you dissect the album, you look at the cover, read the lyrics. Do you ever listen to a song without reading the lyrics, but try to, you know, get your own interpretation by just listening to it?
Right. I mean, you and I are from the same school with that, right? I mean, You'd buy an LP and it would cost you $10 or whatever, and that was some, you know, hard-earned money, and you're not buying another one maybe anytime too quickly, and just take it all in, the artwork, the liner notes, the lyrics, all of that. So, I mean, you know, that's part of why I maybe became so entranced with lyrics early on, is that so many albums had them printed with it, right? And I remember, you know, the original pressings of Kill 'Em All didn't come with the lyrics, and it wasn't until they reissued it through Elektra that they put the lyrics out with it. And so there were lots of songs I had the lyrics wrong on.
I don't know if I've ever read the lyrics to Kill 'Em All.
You know, they're better than you might think, right? I mean, and case in point is, with all due respect to Dave Mustaine, you know, you compare the lyrics to the Four Horsemen to Mechanics, and you get a sense of the aptitude that Hetfield had for writing lyrics early on. And even on Kill 'Em All, I mean, which has lots of sort of fantasy sort of lyrics with Phantom Lord, and I mean, the Four Horsemen is straight out of the Book of the Apocalypse, but it's a lot of that sort of thing. But it really is done about as well as it's ever been done, and really avoids the typical heavy metal cliches. I mean, the only one that really gets into the cliche realm there is Jump in the Fire, and that too is a Mustaine pen song, even if Hetfield did the lyrics.
Wouldn't you think Seek and Destroy is a little, you know, cliche?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, it does fit just the whole mindset of the band and the young people there. I mean, I remember back in the day when, you know, he would introduce it in concert about, you know, getting shit-faced and causing a little senseless destruction, right? I mean, that was it. And it speaks to that sort of mindset.
Well, it's how Kill 'Em All, the progression overall, Kill 'Em All, the Ride to Lightning. You know, Kill 'Em All was loaded with, you know, Whiplash.
Yes.
It's not, you know, no one's ever going to confuse that with, you know, the lyrics to Ride to Lightning. It was their first album. They made Leaps and Bounds. But that era, that Kill, Ride, Master, at least in my interpretation, that was that block of the way they wrote their music, the lyrics. What's your favorite Cliff era lyrics? Because it was definitely a different band when Cliff was there.
Oh, it's a really holy or unholy trilogy, that first three. There's no disputing it. And I mean, my sentimental favorite would probably be Ride the Lightning. I mean, as I said before, Fade to Black is probably the song that really spoke to me. You have Creeping Death, which is really in its way a sort of subtle critique of the God of the Old Testament and organized religion. This is before Hetfield is really getting more personal in his reflections that come out more in the Black Album and Load. And really, For Whom the Bell Tolls is, although inspired by the Hemingway novel and the movie version, is really a nice sort of implicit critique of war. And so that's probably my favorite of the three, but you can't go wrong.
No, you can't go wrong. It depends what flavor you want. You know, they're all like old friends.
Yeah. Oh, I love that analogy of old friends, by the way, because that's the way I look at every album of theirs that comes out to this day, is like I get to see my old friends again. And sometimes I'm not as crazy about what they're up to as I was back in the day, but I still always find something in it, you know, that really resonates with me.
We're talking with Bill Irwin, the author of the book, Metallica, The Meaning of Metallica, Ride to Lyrics. I don't want to jump out of order, but I do want to put a little time in on Saint Anger. How much did the whole Saint Anger, Some Kind of Monster documentary help you interpret some of those lyrics? Because that was a bad period.
Yeah, it really was. You know, that they kept it together enough to have an album and for them to move forward, and that's the real success out of that. I don't think that I spend a lot of ink on Saint Anger in the book, but I do give it some due. Partly, for example, I mean, one of the things that comes clear in watching this, Some Kind of Monster documentary, right, is that Hetfield leaves for rehab. And so the addiction issue is important there. And so lyrics like my lifestyle determines my death style is very important for thinking about the addiction issue. And Sweet Amber, which is a sort of tongue in cheek about, you know, drink, alcohol, you know, that sort of thing.
Isn't that a Kirk Hammett line, though? Your lifestyle determines your death style.
It might be, but it made it into the song, right? So
we'll have to fact check that, and we'll put that in show notes.
Yeah. I mean, that is true, right? That's the one album where they were sharing even lyric writing. Although, I mean, the odd thing about that, right, is that you have Kirk Hammett contributing some lyrics but no guitar solos, right?
the whole operation was upside down. Bill. It was like there was no band. Jason cut out, and I love Jason Newsted.
Yes.
And
yes,
you know, I've been sober since 8206, and the last time I drank alcohol, I sat in my living room, I drank beers, and I watched Some Kind of Monster, and I was like, damn, if Het could do it, and he's this, you know, this huge guy, I understand where he is coming from, that, you know, Johnny Verno could do this. And, you know, I haven't drank since. It was tough being James Hetfield. He talks about going over to the, you know, he picked those Russian hunting trips over spending time with his family. You know, was it to get away? Was it to drink the vodka? But that whole Saint Anger, you know, some of those lyrics, they're raw. That's what I'm trying to say. They're just raw.
They are raw, and congratulations to you on your sobriety. We share that
Thank
in
you.
Common, as it turns out. I haven't had a drink since 97, just celebrated 25 years of sobriety. And
congratulations to you, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting watching Hetfield's journey. As fans know, he relapsed a couple of years ago, and as far as we know, he's back on the beam now, and it'll be interesting to see what lyrics in the future have to say about that. But yeah, I mean, he was in a really terrible place emotionally and everything else, and that's a case where anger, Saint Anger, didn't actually yield great lyrics. It yielded something, but it was just a product that they got out there. Although, as you know, Vernal, from talking to lots of fans, there are fans of Metallica for whom that somehow is their favorite album. You know, as there are fans who, you know, Reload is their favorite album. And, you know, so it's amazing how even what we might consider a bad Metallica album is, in some people's estimation, great music and even great lyrics.
Well, it's like with yourself. You discovered them in Ride the Lightning. That was their launching point.
Yeah.
Even the band to this day, when you go see them live, three or four songs into the set, James asked the crowd, who's new to the Metallica family? And it's a fair amount of people.
Hey,
we're not here to dispute. The Metallica machine is fantastic.
Yeah.
So let's pick it up. The Black Album.
Yeah, so I mean, the Black Album, right, of course, is where Metallica lost a lot of fans and gained a lot of new fans, and a lot of old schoolers thinking that it had gone too commercial at that point. But lyrically, it's in some ways one of the deepest, Enter Sandman aside. There's all kinds of great stuff on there, for example, from Unforgiven, which you really start to see some of Hetfield's autobiography coming through there, the way in which he was resenting the way in which he was raised and the way that people try to put you into a box and deprive you of your authenticity. And we also see a very thinly veiled storytelling about the God that failed and his experience growing up as a Christian Scientist and the way in which there was all sorts of hypocrisy and misdeeds involved in that. And you know, just other songs that seem really kind of self-reflective and even self-lacerating. The Struggle Within, My Friend of Misery. And, you know, then we have other songs about freedom and becoming who you are, like, you know, some of the radio hits, Wherever I May Roam and A Wolf and Man. Almost all those songs, I think, in the book get some pretty close line by line analysis.
Are there any happy Metallica songs? And I don't say that derogatory, like it's all gloom and doom. I don't want to stereotype, but is there anything upbeat, a positive message? Or
I think even the songs that seem very negative and dark do have a positive message and inspiring hope. But you know what? It's tough to come up with good songs that are happy in almost any genre. You know, most songs, I mean, maybe about love, and love is sort of happy, you know, and you can think of Nothing Else Matters along those lines. And that's a much better than average love song. It's tough to come up with something that's straight out happy metal, you know.
It doesn't but
you're into Poison, Nothing But a Good Time at that point, right?
And you're right. It's there is a lot of positives that come out of this. It's just it's darkened with, you know, how is Hetfield going to growl and be happy?
I mean, I guess I know you're a big Van Halen fan. There's lots of Van Halen songs that have a kind of a happy feel to them.
Are you a Van Halen fan?
I'm not a big Van Halen fan, but I grew up with guys who were big Van Halen fans, and so I know it all.
Oh, well, for part two, let's do Van Halen, the DLR years.
Well, I don't know if you've ever talked to this guy, but Greg Renoff. Have you talked to him?
Several times. We hung out down at Rockin' Pod.
Yeah, but to plug his book, Van Halen Rising, is just an incredible book.
Then the follow-up, the Ted Templeman
book. That's a great one, too. Yeah.
The trilogy. It was the Greg Renoff, Van Halen Rising, the Templeman book, and the Noel Monk, Running with the Devil.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Noel Monk was the manager of Van Halen.
Oh, okay.
Worked for Warner Brothers, and he came off the road with the Sex Pistols. His next job was to be the road manager for Van Halen. Never even knew the band, who it was.
Yeah.
He met him when he flew to Chicago for the opening night. By the end of the tour, he became their manager.
Yeah.
And was their manager through the end of 1984 when the band broke up, and he never had more than a 30-day contract.
Wow.
But his book is fantastic. So you did you reach out to Greg
on
this?
Yeah, I had read Van Halen Rising mostly because I have friends who were big Van Halen fans, and they were talking about it. And Greg, like me, is actually a PhD.
Yeah.
And he's a historian. And so he brought a historian's chops to researching the early years of Van Halen. And he tells the story of it just incredibly. And so I was just really hooked. And I reached out to him, telling him how much I liked the book. And, you know, we have, you know, at least an email or Twitter friendship. And my book, The Meaning of Metallica, is actually published by the same publisher who published his. So there was some connection there as well.
Would you do a part two?
Oh, I would do a part two. I cover, you know, all the albums to one degree or another, even the Load albums. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm probably like a lot of older fans who are not all that enthused about a lot of the songs, but like a lot of fans, I could collapse the two into one album that I like very much. And there's some great lyrical reflections. So some of my favorite lyrics from Metallica, and certainly on the issues of addiction and potential sobriety, at least, come on the Load album. So that the house that Jack built on Load, and then we have Low Man's lyric and Fixer on Reload.
Mm-hmm.
So those all get pretty close attention in the book, but not every song does. And so one of the things that I say in the introduction to the book, and again at the end, I give the reader my personal email address and my Twitter handle, and hopefully you can make those available on your website too. And I say, you know, you read the book, get in touch with me, send me an email, send me a DM through Twitter. you know, tell me what I left out. Tell me what you think I got wrong. And you know, let's have a conversation.
You're opening a door, Bill.
Well, I mean, it's a great thing, you know, in the sense of like, you know, I tell you the story just now about Greg Renolf, you know, things come out of it that way.
Yeah.
And, I read a lot of books and sometimes I'll contact the author and sometimes I hear back like I did with Greg and sometimes I don't. And, you know, if you're contacting Stephen King, that's one thing, but I'm no Stephen King. Contact me and, you know, as long as you're not being a total jerk, you know, I'm glad to have a conversation and maybe a second book will come out of that, you know. So I don't talk about the Outlaw Torn. I know that's a lot of Load fan era's Load era fans' favorite. You know, I don't talk about the Cthulhu songs very much. I mean, I'd love to hear from people who think, you know, you really missed it with that, leaving that out or the way you interpreted that. Of course, I'd love to hear from somebody too who says, hey, you really got it right. But either way, get in touch with me.
And you're right. Those two Loads could be compacted into one. It is what it is. Hey, our band's still releasing stuff.
Yeah.
Magnetic. And I like the Magnetic choice you did. Well, you had the Judas Kiss in there. That's a great song.
Yeah. So if I just say something about that, right? I mean, I analyzing the Judas Kiss, I mean, I really see a lot of the lyrics there speaking to perhaps a sense of betrayal that Hetfield, the band, feels, you know, when a lot of fans did jump ship on them and the doubt that they could ever really do anything worthwhile again. And I see a song that I like very much. It may not be the deepest lyrically, but it speaks to me, Broken, Beaten, Scarred, as in a sense responding to that, right? Where, you know, you rise again after you fall.
Yep.
And you show your scars. To me, that you know, even in simple form, really shows a lot of what Metallica's lyrics have been about from the beginning, right? Showing your pain, your anger, and trying to own it and move past it if you can.
We're talking with Bill Irwin, the author of the book, Metallica, The Meaning of Metallica, Ride to Lyrics, just came out this week over on Tuesday the 19th. Bill, where could people get this?
Well, they can get anywhere they get books, I suppose. I don't like to tell people where they should get anything,
yeah.
Particularly Metallica fans. But if you know that Amazon website, I'm sure they have it. Barnes & Noble, maybe your local bookstore, your local small bookstore. There are fewer and fewer of those. They're going the way of record stores these days. Very few of them left. Not quite as marginalized as record stores, but get it anywhere you can and read it and get in touch with me.
What kind of shows did you see down in New York?
Oh, yeah. Well, so I mentioned L'Amour. I don't know if you're familiar with.
L'Amour,
yeah.
CBGBs.
I mean, it was just legendary.
What else was down there? There's something at the tip of my tongue.
That was
Roseland.
Yeah, Roseland. And I'm blanking on some of the other sort of smaller places in the city, but in New Rochelle, which is Westchester and not far from where I was in Yonkers, it was like one of the first places they had the COVID cases. There was a place called Streets where you saw all kinds of they might be a cover band or they might be an original band, like so in Streets, which probably held 200 or 300 people. I saw Nuclear Assault. I was a big fan of Nuclear Assault at the time. Hardcore. What's the name of the band? The Agnostic Front. Great, you know, show from them.
Yeah, Danny Lilker's from town up here.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's from Rochester. He actually runs. There's a big record store there. You're talking about record stores. We still have several of them.
Yeah.
Great House of Guitars in Rochester.
All right.
Three stories. It's legendary.
Yeah.
We have the Record Archive. In the Record Archive, they have a back area, a stage and a bar. And, you know, there's still a metal movement up here.
Awesome. You know what? What a great place in New York was that, you know, I talked about being like Beavis and Butthead. There was a place called the Rising Sun in Yonkers. Walking distance from my house, and Metallica and Raven actually played there, you know, Kill 'Em All for One tour.
Yeah.
I was listening to, it must have been the episode you just sent me about Kill 'Em All. One of the guys was talking about, maybe both of them talked about the warehouse, you know, where Anthrax was and Metallica, you know, stayed and that kind of thing. And one of the guys mentioned a band called Blacklace. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
No.
So they were from Yonkers and the Bronx. And you know, T.T. Quick would play there. T.T. Quick and Blacklace were like the two big bands at that time. Going further back in time, Twisted Sister would play there. But anyway, but we love Blacklace. They and check out the first Blacklace album if you can come across it. They had a really hot female singer, Marianne Scandiffio, and she could really sing, and she was, you know, eye candy on top of it.
Yeah.
And a really, you know, I mean, it was poppy metal, I guess, but you know, it was ballsy in its way. No synthesizers or any of that. So my friend Joe and I were in love with Marianne Scandiffio. She must have been 19 or 20 at the time. We're 14 or 15.
Yeah.
And the drinking age, I think at that time, was still 18. And so, you know, we'd go stand outside the Rising Sun, and you know, these 16-year-old girls would get in, but no Beavis and Butthead characters like us would get in. And they'd have the signs up for what bands were coming, and my friend Joe stole the Blacklace sign, and he had it hanging up in his room. And I was just thinking about that today, hearing them mention, because they must have been pissed. They must have paid money to make that sign and display it. And meanwhile, this idiot kid, you know, they didn't even know had stolen it, you know? So
yeah. Where's that sign now?
It's probably gone. I doubt he held on to it. The other thing that's missing is my buddy Joe's painted vest. He had the Queensryche EP was painted on the back of his chest. And we're always still talking about what happened to the vest. I tell him I stole it, and I'm going to show up at the next, you know, reunion with it and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Do you still go to shows when you can? Or?
Yeah. It's been a while since I've been to a metal show, but you know, pandemic and all that. You know what I'm going to see pretty soon? There's a place out here in Pennsylvania called the Sherman Theater, and Richie Blackmore is doing his medieval lute music.
Really?
Or whatever there. Yeah, so I'm gonna go check that out. What the hell, you know?
Now, where are you in Pennsylvania?
Near Scranton.
Wow.
Which I guess was the next stop on the tour after Buffalo. I remember hearing you, you know, talking about the ride.
Yeah, it was. They got snowed in. I don't know if you heard the John Bush Armored Saint one.
Yeah, I think that maybe that's what I was, or maybe you played a clip of it, or maybe you talked about it. I forget.
Yeah, Scranton was the guy. I do the show with, one of my correspondents, Metal Walt. That's his air name. He lives like 15 minutes from Dingbats in New Jersey.
Okay.
So in November, and Walt, that's a great episode. You should go back and listen to his first episode. He's a professional bootlegger.
Oh, yeah.
He's been bootlegging shows for like 35 years.
Oh, wow.
That's how I met him.
Yeah.
And we've become friends, and now he's part of the show.
Yeah.
But he goes to shows all the time.
Oh yeah,
all the time. And we went down to see Raven in November, did a special with them. You know, we're hanging out with them on their tour bus. It's a fucking Winnebago. And they're loading up there. It was so not rock and roll.
Right.
Felt bad because we did the interview, then we were going around the corner to get Italian.
Right.
And as we were walking out, their catered food was coming in, and we should have brought him to dinner, you know?
Really? You get a chance to take Raven to dinner, you should, right?
We should have, like, hey, guys, I go get a real meal? But before we go, I do want to touch on some of your other releases. You do a pop culture series. You've done books on Seinfeld, The Simpsons, and The Matrix. Tell us about them.
Yeah, sure. So this goes all the way back to the late 90s. My day job, right, is I'm a philosophy professor at a small college in Pennsylvania, King's College. And when I started teaching, I was not that much older than some of my students. And so I'd reference things in class like Seinfeld or The Simpsons. And everybody knew it, and I could tie it into something unfamiliar in philosophy and try to bring them along that way. And it ended up being something that I wasn't the only one doing. And so my philosophy professor friends and I would compile these books like Seinfeld in philosophy, The Simpsons in philosophy. And we had a really big hit with The Matrix in philosophy shortly after that film came out in 1999. That one made it all the way to the bestseller list on the New York Times, as you had mentioned. And one of the books in the series, this is going back to like 2005 at this point, is actually Metallica and philosophy. Someone wants the philosophical spin on Metallica, they could pick that up. It only goes as far as Saint Anger, but that's pretty good.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yep. So this is technically my second book on Metallica. Oh. That one is an edited collection where I wrote one of the chapters, and I had, you know, 18, 19 of my philosophy buddies writing the others. And, you know, back in at a certain point, it was hard to find Metallica fans among philosophy professors, but not as much anymore. And that's an ongoing series of books. You know, we just had some recent titles on the science fiction show The Expanse and philosophy, basically a whole bunch of ones on the Marvel movies and philosophy, and just always trying to connect philosophy and pop culture in a way to spread both around.
Well, let's talk about the Seinfeld one.
Yeah.
Why Seinfeld? Because that's my one of my Rushmore of comedies.
Oh yeah, that's way up there. You know, Seinfeld might be my all time favorite. Well, I mean, and Curb Your Enthusiasm goes in the same direction, right? Even more all the sort of picky little questions, like is soup a meal? Is it rational to do the opposite? All these kind of things, which they exploit to just great comedic effect, are the kind of things that philosophy and philosophers have been talking about in a sort of boring way for, you know, 2,500 years. So to find something like Seinfeld and be able to link it in a fun, interesting way with something that's been dry was, you know, a bit of a success.
Those evergreen moments.
Yeah.
You could keep going back to it. And I feel you either get it or don't get it.
It was amazing that Seinfeld had the mass appeal it did. In some ways, it's such an East Coast, New York-based show, but people got it all over the world.
Love Seinfeld.
Yeah,
Simpsons.
Yeah.
Why the Simpsons?
Oh, it was the same kind of thing. I mean, at a certain point in time, I think the Simpsons in philosophy came out in 2000 or 2001. And at that time, every college kid knew the Simpsons, even if they weren't big fans. You couldn't avoid it. It was the closest thing to a common language. And the Simpsons is just always been written, well, I mean, at least back in the day, it was always written very literately and with great wit and observation. And so it was just a natural pairing.
Again, the book, The Meaning of Metallica, Ride to Lyrics. It's out now. All right, my friend. Well, best of luck with it. Are you getting, is there a pulse on it? Are people reaching out? Or
I mean, you know, like you, there have been some nice podcast requests, and I've been, you know, doing some of that, and we'll see. Hopefully it'll get some traction.
Bill, it's nice meeting you, man. You know, we're cut from the same cloth.
Yeah,
you
know, I feel like that for sure, Verna.
Again, thank you, and take care of yourself, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Metal for Life.
Thank you for listening to Metal Mayhem ROC. Check out our website at metalmayhemroc.com for information on podcasts, archives, links to all our live radio shows, and all sorts of info. Please like, follow, and share with everyone, even your non-metal friends. And always remember to keep it heavy.